So, like, all your people that you would give presents to were all book lovers, and you would tend to give them chapters, vouchers.
I hope they're book lovers. I don't really.
It's a good present.
Really give it that, yeah, I don't give it that much, though.
OTB AM, live, weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by one of Mayo's greatest ever footballers, two-time All-Star, Footballer of the Year in 2017, Andy Moran. How are you?
I'm good, Nate. Thanks for having me.
Author of a brand new book, Andy, Lessons Learned in Pursuit of Glory, in all good bookstores now, and a perfect reading for the Christmas. It is not your normal sports autobiography. In fact, it's not really an autobiography at all, because it's more of a, I guess, an homage to your Mayo teammates. I know Tommy Rooney at the launch described it as a love letter to your Mayo teammates. You spend more time talking about other people and their influence than actually talking about yourself. Was that always the plan?
It was kind of the original idea of a book came to me in 2018 when I got approached going into my last year. I think it was quite obvious that it was going to be my last year playing for Mayo in 2019, and I was lucky enough that James Horne rang me to go back, and a couple, including Liam Hayes and a couple of other publishers, rang me and said, would you be interested in doing something? And I always kind of said, I don't really have a story to write about. I said, I'm quite the non-controversial type. I've a wife, I've two kids, I live in Balladreen, I play football and have a business. But outside that, there wasn't many drinking stories,
right,
or messing or crack like that. So it was just, and Liam Hayes was actually that said it to me. He said, no, there's a different way to do a book. He said, it doesn't have to be controversial. He said, what you can do, he said, if you can tell a story and thank people that helped you along the way, likes of Jono and guys like that who helped you along the way, he goes, you'll never get the opportunity to do something like that again. So during first lockdown, I just started writing. Going into my coaching career, I just started writing about things I could learn from the Colin Boyles of this world, the Lee Keegans, the Keelan Crows and Aidan O'Shea's, and what I could learn and bring with myself and what I could learn from them. And was it a plan? Probably not, but after a short while it did look like it was going to be something of that ilk.
So you wrote this with Colin Sheridan, the Examiner writer, but you wrote the book and he basically edited it.
I wrote the I suppose the initial pieces of it.
Yeah.
My writing wouldn't be that strong. But it was something I did. I did a newspaper article during 2021 and with the Mirror, and it was I remember phoning in the first article, you know, and Pat Nolan was my writer at the time, and phoning into Pat, and it just didn't sit right with me. It didn't sound like me on the paper. And so what I said to Pat, I said, can I type it and you edit it? And he said, oh, geez, that'd be great, you know, because it helped him, but it got my point across. Yes, he changed, you know, the bad writing, the editing, the translation, but I could feel that I was writing the pieces. And similar with Colin, I had about 55,000 words down on paper and gave it to Colin, and I suppose I had the structure and them little bits written, but then Colin, with his unique, lovely style of writing, could kind of put it into, I suppose, what people could read.
I know when Paul Kimmich talks about writing a biography, he often talks about wanting to see the back garden, that everybody has the front garden that is beautiful and is what you want the world to see, but then he wants to get in behind the back door to what the world doesn't see. You're talking about yourself as if that didn't exist, that the two of them were the same, that actually maybe there wasn't a huge interest in what had gone on behind the scenes in your life. But it seems from reading the book that actually you as a teenager was quite interesting, that quite a hard-nosed, difficult to maybe communicate to at times. You had a certain view of yourself that wasn't always reflected by coaches' views of you.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. The reason I didn't go that route was because did I get a bit wild when I used to go out for a few pints, and yes, I did. I was in Sligo IT at the time, and there was a lot of lunatics around the place at that time, so you had to fit in with the crew as well. So of course there was that, but is that any different than anyone else that did that at the time? I was a young, kind of very lucky kid where we were brought up in a place called Alton Terrace in Balladreen, where a local council estate. But my two parents, my mum is still alive, thank God, and my dad passed away in 2018 at a good age. I was very lucky my whole way through, didn't lose family members. You know, we didn't have a lot of money and stuff like that, but a very privileged upbringing, because I had a really good support network around me, really good family, and a really good club in the football side. I suppose the negatives was that Joe, you did have that chip on your shoulder. You were from Ballandreen. You were always deemed, you know Mayo, and you know the way we are. We vote, we play community games, we do everything in Roscommon, we play football in Mayo. So it was a unique in that regard. And when I went there, I probably never deemed myself good enough to be there in the first place. And then you were always kind of building that kind of wall around you to make sure you didn't, if you failed, the failing was on their behalf and not on your behalf. So it was kind of just kind of getting myself out of my own way.
Yeah.
My mother would have been my biggest fan. She'd have been always saying, Joe, why aren't they picking you? It was always someone else's fault. But when I look back, was there wasted years there? There probably was. But was there great lessons in it? There was.
Well, I think that lesson is within all the chapters when you're talking about the different players, because on the outside you look at inter-county players and it always looks so easy, because more often than not they're the star player for their club at underage level and they progress through the ranks. But you see from the way you talk about Killian O'Connor and Keith Higgins and Lee Keegan that they all had different paths and different moments in their career where something clicked and something changed. Because my memory of you growing up and being a couple of years older was like everyone knew Andy Moran's name. Maybe it was more on the soccer side of things than the football side. And I would have always thought, actually, you know, Andy Moran from 14-15, everybody knew was going to be a Mayo footballer.
Yeah, I think my first game was always soccer growing up. I was probably better at soccer, if I'm being honest. And but I would say even guys that you might see that have a path that could make it, if they don't have the right influences around them, I think they could go astray very quickly. Like I went to Tralee when I came out of college first, went down 11 stone, I think, and came home 2 months later about 13 stone. You know, so that path can lead you could go down the wrong path very quickly. Yeah. Unless you have key influencers around you. And for me, in our town, we were very lucky with the influencers we had. We had John O's aforementioned, but we had a guy called John Gaffney. His grandson Rory actually plays for Shamrock Rovers, and a Hall of Fame handball coach. No nonsense sort of character, and it just pull you into line. You know, we were Frank Kelly, Brian Tansey, these guys we were just very lucky in my generation to have them guys around the place. And did I think I was going to make it at 14-15? You know, I remember playing minor, for example, and my first game for minor I played centre forward. My second game I was taken off after 20 minutes. My third game I was on the bench for the Connacht final, and by the time we got to play Crow Park against Westmead I was sitting in the stand. You know, so it could fall away there very quickly. And I suppose what the book is about is that to just show people, coaches included, that each character is different, and to get to where you need to get to, even to know yourself, to what's your strengths, what's your weaknesses, to show the people of all kind of elements. Like David Clark's story, for example, so many disappointments along the way, but eventually through hard work, determination, and identifying what he was weak at, went and got his rewards, not to All-Ireland final, but was recognised as one of the best that played the game for Mayo.
John O'Mahony was a huge early influence, and geez, how lucky you are that John O'Mahony, one of the great coaches of his generation, is a teacher in your school, is coaching your school's team. And he seemed to spot something in you as well. He seemed to have a very close relationship, even at a young age.
Yeah, like we were... like my dad would have had huge respect for John O'Mahony. I remember even coming home and I used to peg the bag in the corner, like, and dad would take out the boots and wash them because you couldn't go to John with, you know, you need to be looking right. Well, to go to training. So,
and would he not make you wash your own boots?
No. That was the lazy side of me coming out as a kid. But he used to do things like that for me, and just you had to have always your right gear on, right time, right influences. He always kind of made you think that you could change instead of the whole situation could change around you. And it was, I didn't pick up that lesson at 16, 17, 18. But when I got older, I found myself doing this more and more. And that influence was maybe a delayed influence. Like, it was a huge influence when we were in college. But when I left then, it could have went either way for me. But when I came back into it, it was all of a sudden, it was like, okay, what can you improve? What can you do better? And then watching when Killian comes in 11 into the squad, he was always about, what can I do more? Do you know, and you can just, all of a sudden, these link up along your path.
Killian O'Connor, the way you talk about him and his impact on the team, right from that day in Ruislip where it could have all gone horribly wrong, and that great journey of the last decade probably wouldn't have happened if London had somehow seen it out. I remember talking to James Horne and him mentioning Killian O'Connor at halftime, like, kid coming into this squad, and how he was able to speak to the dressing room. What did you learn from him, even though you were considerably older?
Just preparation. I kind of started my journey in the winter of 2010, and everyone could recognise that there was a free taking opportunity within the Mayo team. Someone had to take the frees. Alan was doing a decent job on it, but like myself, he wouldn't have been a natural free taker like as in the Morris Sheridan, Dean Rock sort of. Do you know what I'm saying? He'd have been a more of a manufactured free taker.
Yeah.
Connor got injured, Connor Mortimer, so all of a sudden there was this gap. So everyone was thinking, we need a free taker. So everyone was kind of doing bits. I met Morris Sheridan down winter for the first time in terms of a kicking coach. But then all of a sudden this young kid comes in, he plays his first game against GMIT in McHale Park. I think he scores 1-5, 1-6 at 18 years of age. And you just think, this guy is special. And what was special about him wasn't that he was anyway gifted more than anybody else in the team. Was that he was out. And all of a sudden, me as a senior player was seeing this 18-year-old kid out in the wet and the rain and the back pitch in Castlebar kicking. And all of a sudden, Joe, you know, everyone else started following.
Right.
And I know that sounds silly as an 18-year-old, but the progression, like when you were younger and you went into the squads and the Mayo squads in the noughties, like if you were seen out, Joe, you know, you were seen as a real outlier.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you have this young kid coming in. We had already started that kind of standard process, but then you have this guy coming in, kicking ball, more ball than anyone else in the squad, and you just go, let's just follow him.
So that wasn't the way when you first went into the squad and a Kieran McDonald was there.
Well, see, the thing about Kieran McDonald was a genius, but he wasn't there many winters. Kieran used to come, so in 0-4, for example, we had played New York in the championship and Kieran came back in and revolutionised the team, basically put the team on his back and brought us to an All-Ireland final, you know. But Kieran, like, used to play, Cross Malina were flying at the time, Nathan. They used to play a lot of winter football, so a lot of the leagues were played without Kieran, so you didn't see that side of him, where with Killian, rain, hail, snow, he was out kicking ball.
You approach, I guess, the elephant in the room very early in the book, which is not winning the All-Ireland title. And I think it's right at the start of chapter two. You say, in the context of the win-or-die prism of elite sport, the criticism is entirely justified. We did not succeed. Loath as I am to use the F word, we failed. In my 17 seasons as an intercounty footballer, I failed. And even reading the Killian O'Connor chapter, it's just not that simple, because people point to Killian O'Connor sometimes and point to the missed free, and talk about bottle. The Killian O'Connor of the bottle when it came to that free that hit the post and ultimately Dublin go down and win the game. Yet a year previously, he's kicked one of the greatest points of all time at Croke Park. The disappointments of All-Ireland when you're looking at your teammates, does it change your opinion of them in any way, what happened on All-Ireland final? Do you think you'd think about players differently if you'd won an All-Ireland?
It's a great question. I think you probably would. I think the stuff I've won in the past, like county title, Sigerson's or anything like that, you have that unique bond when you win something. But do I look at, I suppose the failure part of it is that you set out a goal for yourself when you start playing, and our goal was to win All-Irelands. Unfortunately, we met Dublin along the way. It was to win All-Irelands and not to win one, to win multiple, and we didn't get it. So I think you have to identify that. If you're going to write a book, you can't be saying, listen, everything was brilliant. There was that element that we haven't got there. I didn't get there as a player. But how can you change it? But sport is very, very unique, Nathan. If I look at, I run my businesses in the gym industry. If I get to second in terms of successful gyms in the country over the next 10 years, I'll be doing very well and everyone will speak about you highly. If you do it in sport and you lose in a final and you come second, all of a sudden you just joined the pack of 30 that didn't succeed. So it's a very unique area, but I don't think that should be lessened by like I go through Killian, for example, what he scored in semi-finals, what he scored in finals. It's crazy to think anyone would think any different than him to a top. Like, you often heard this marquee forwards, you know, the highest scorer of all time, playing for your team. So I just thought of him as the guy that set the standard, that was took pressure off myself in terms of, all of a sudden you might be the one that's getting man marked. All of a sudden they have to mark Killian O'Connor. You're marking probably the second best man marker. If there's a sweeper in front of you, they're probably going 1.5 on Killian O'Connor, and you're just 1-on-1 with your man. And that the difference that makes to the dynamic of a team is insane.
You're the golden boy, I'm going to say, of this team, whereby I think everybody seemed to always love Andy Moran. And I'm sure you'll say there was lots of criticism along the way, but some of the criticism of this team, like, you'll have seen what people have said about Killian O'Connor, what was said about Robbie Henley after some of the mistakes that were made, what's been said about Aidan O'Shea. How difficult did you find it being within that group? And, like, it's clear from this how much you loved your teammates, how you genuinely loved them as people and as being part of that group. How difficult was it for you as, say, a senior player reading some of the things, and even still hearing some of the things that are said about some of the players who you speak so well of in this book?
Yeah, it's probably harder now, Nathan, to be honest, because I read it now myself. Where when I was playing, I never read it. My wife, Jennifer, who's famous now through the pod, but she used to kind of, you know, delve around kind of all the kind of the Twitter pages, the sites and stuff like that to see what was said. And she used to kind of inform me of what was being said, so I could maybe, if someone needed a chat or a bit of protection, or, you know, you could tell the coach or something, this guy's getting a bit of grief online. You know, that's the way I used to do it. So I probably find it more difficult now. But when you fail, it's funny, in a team setting, when you fail together. I don't think there was any kind of...
Do you ever turn on each other? Did anyone ever turn on someone after a big defeat and say, and question a mistake that was made?
Oh, of course. I think on all good teams, and the Dublin team, the Donegal team that we played, even the Tyrone team this year, I don't think everyone ever questions a mistake. I think everyone questions maybe a mentality or an effort. And if your effort was good and you came off the pitch and you died with your boots on, I don't think there could ever be a question there after that. Like, I think Tom Parsons talked eloquently about the 2017 final when he retired. Mm. He goes, he looked around, he goes, "Joe, what else could we have done? Joe, we scored 116 on the day, played really well, but we just came up against a Dublin team who played equally as well and knew how to win when it came down to it."
And he was the one who, you say in the book, was always the first to turn around and say, "Why did we lose?"
Yeah, and he was that guy. Tom was a... He used to drive me mad with kick-out strategies. You know, me being an inside forward, we used to spend hours on kick-outs, and or like even in team meetings, like Tom and the keepers would talk about kick-outs for, you know, 40 minutes, and, you know, I'd be up the other end of the field thinking, can we talk about how we're going to get the ball into the full forward line, you know? But he was always the guy that would really analyse the video. Like, you could get a call from Tom the Tuesday after an All-Ireland final, looking at video, we could improve on this, we could work on this. We could do this a bit better. What about this young guy coming through? And we always felt that. For me, that eagerness, that it probably faded after 17, if I'm being honest. There was a moment after 17, we were sitting in the City West, myself, Jenny and Charlotte, who was on the front of the book. And there was a bit of fatality to that defeat for me personally.
Right.
Because before that, there was always, lads, we can get better here. You know, we've ran Dublin to a draw here, we've lost by a point, we can improve again and we can go again. And in 17, I think we made them improvements.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
they're 2 points up with 64 minutes gone.
And unfortunately, they had Connolly coming off the bench, you know, they had Kevin Mack coming off the bench, which reshuffled our pack. And at the end of the day, Dean kicks a wonderful free to win the game.
You mentioned City West. I remember being in City West in 06 and thinking I'm never going back again. It was just a sense of depression hanging over the entire hotel after losing the final. As a group, how do you break the ice after losing an All-Ireland final? How do you laugh as a group again? How do you smile again? When do you know when is the right time to actually, I don't want to say start moving on, but realise that it's disappointing, yes, it's heartbreaking, but there is more to life. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, for me it was kids. It was definitely kids, because you see the kids after the game and, you know, they don't really care, to be honest with you. They come onto the pitch. I think they can, like, even Charlotte, she was 3 or just coming up to 3 in 17. I think even then they could feel that, okay, there's something not right here. I'm not being thrown up in the air here. I'm not being, you know, but they can sense it. But I think it does take you out of it. For me, it was that area. There's always good characters on a team too who can really spot, okay, lads, okay, maybe I need to go outside my comfort zone here to lift the mood of the group. And, Joe, you're coming down on a train and on the Monday, you're getting the Joe, the crowds in Ballyhonus when you're coming in, even maybe a crowd in Castlereagh when you're coming in through. They're tough because you can just dream about the fireworks and the bonfires, which never happened. But there's always someone within the group that can spot it. For us, it was obviously Barry Moore and the likes of Robbie.
Barry Moore can give you a hard time.
Ah, yeah, Barry was the entertainer. You know, he was a great player, great battles with Aidan and Shamie. Like Aidan and Shamie never get to where they get to. And Tom Parsons without Barry Moran, because Joe, when he was at training, he gave it to, had great days on the pitch himself. Mm. But Joe, the honesty of the battle between them guys, and I'm sure the Dublin guys will say the same about the guys that were the impact players or the guys that were in around it. But he was the leader of that opposition. If you were going into a main game, he was the big guy, but he was also the entertainer of the group. And
John Morrison had a pop at you that haunted you for the rest of your career.
Yeah, it stuck with me. But he was right. I think he was
what
right.
What did he
say? Yeah. So it was. I started the first two games against Leitrim and Galway in 2006. You know, with the great Kevin O'Neill came in then for the Connacht final, took my spot. And I never regained it. You know, and I went to John one night. I said, "John, what's the story?" And he was flapping around for a few minutes, and then in his strong arm accent, he politely told me I was a bit too fat, I was a bit too round around the edges. So, of course, I had the misfortune of telling the great Barry Moran about this, you know. And for the rest of my career, every time we got on the bus in Ballardrine, I got in a Castle Bar Armax, and he shouted from the back of the bus that I was too fat, you know. So that was
the confidence boost you needed.
Just the confidence boost on the Saturday before an All-Ireland semi-final.
You touch on the likes of a Tom Parsons and a Barry Moran, who you mentioned, like, they've had big days and big occasions and would really be seen as an integral part of that great Mayo team. Your chapter on Quaylen Crowell is fascinating as well, because he's someone who's probably slightly below the radar, and there's lots of them around the Mayo panel and around every panel, and his importance. Players like that, like, on the inside, I guess they're not looked at as any different to the 15 that are starting. When you're in that squad, you're in that squad.
Yeah, and again, this is obviously my story was told through a Mayo lens, but I think a lot of teams and panels and squads, no matter what sport, even in a working setting, will be able to kind of see what we're talking about and say, okay, they can identify the person that was this person. But for us, and the Quaylen Crowell one, was there was always a 26 that needed to be picked before the squad, and it was hard not to make the 15, but it was unbelievably hard to not make the 26. And within that, there's fellas there that you know aren't going to make it, but there's fellas there that a lot of the squad are thinking, this guy is playing out of his skin, why isn't he making it? And the reason, I suppose, Quaylen didn't make it, and he was always fighting with my brother-in-law David Drake for probably that last position, was because, you know, you had Ger Caff, you had Chris Barrett, you had Keith Higgins, you had Colin Boyle, you had such an elite group of defenders, and Quaylen wasn't the guy that used to break through. But for me, his influence was just incredible on myself. He was the guy that literally could take the disappointment, know he had a job to do on the Sunday and the Wednesday before a big game, and you should just go out and do his job. And the key one was, when you get to an All-Ireland semi-final and you know, then just say we bet Kerry in 17,
yeah,
deep down he probably knew then, Joe, this wasn't going to happen, but he made the sacrifice, he made the commitment. He actually said it to me on a personal level, Joe, we'll go at this for 2 or 3 weeks, and just came in and was just a champion for the team.
You touched on various different parts of players' characters. Lee Keegan, you mentioned, you know, his loyalty. He says he'd bury the body with you.
Yeah.
Aidan O'Shea is the focus of so much talk around Mayo.
Yeah,
you said that Mayo struggle with independent thinkers. Why do you think that is, and where does Aidan O'Shea fit into that?
Yeah, that's a good way to lead it in. But it's something I've always kind of felt we like our. In 2011, for example, I write about it in the book. We come in off the pitch against Cork defending champions, and so many times in that past, the 2010 final, league final, Cork just went 5 or 6 ahead of us, and we just let them off. But we battled and we went and we strong. We get a standing ovation coming off the pitch. There's only about 23,000 people in the stadium. And we were thinking, wow, this is amazing. But if you think about it, all the Mayo psyche then was, we worked hard, we really gave it. But that should be a given.
Yeah.
You know, that should be the given. That should be the standard. But we kind of said, okay, if we can do this, we'll get the fans behind us and away we go. And that's what happened over the next couple of years. But I do think we've always struggled with the young guy at 14 who might just come in and say, I just want to score. And like, all of a sudden, you could end up, that fella then isn't making 16s minor squads because he's not doing probably the tackling and the work rate of everybody else. And we lack that killer then. Like, we have, if you look at the Kerry transition from Sheehy to Fitzgerald to Cooper to Clifford, they've always had that really talismanic finishing forward. Dublin, the same with Bernard, Paul Mannion. Them guys have always been that really classy, creative forward. Jerry McConnelly, all these guys. But in Mayo, we don't produce these. Our tradition is to produce hard-working, fast grafters, 10, 12, 15k a match distance covers.
Yeah, halfbacks.
Halfbacks. And that's our tradition. And I nearly fell into that tradition myself, where I played there for a time being. Like when I was growing up, my favourite players were the likes of Noel Kennelly and these guys, and even going to Galway, or well, Fergal Costello from Mayo, and then going to Galway, Sean Ogdepriore, Decky Meehan. I love them guys. So what's in our psyche that we don't like? And for me, it's that we don't like the guy that might think a tiny bit differently, that might just see things like not in a straight line, go around a corner. McDonald was the key one, where, and Kevin O'Neill was another one. Two geniuses with a football in their hand. Joe, like, Kieran mightn't have been the easiest to handle at times throughout his playing career, but you have to, as a coach, you have to find a way to, right, okay, it hasn't worked for him there. How do I get him in? How do we get the best out of him? Do we have to get the team to kind of move around him a bit more? And when we did that, we went from a distinctly average team to making an All-Ireland final. So there's definitely a route around that. If you look at Tyrone, for example, you've Owen Mulligan there. Do you know, like, look at the goal he scores in 0-5 to take two fellas out of it. Was Mulligan straightforward? I severely doubt it, you know. And I'd say it was good crack along the way as well. But there was ways that Mickey Hart got and moved him along, and kind of moving Jerry McConnelly the same for Dublin. And the Colin McFadden, look what McGuinness did to him in 2012, probably made him into the deadly forward he should have been when he was 16, do you know. And he was... It's amazing how if we think a tiny bit differently, the results we could get.
Aidan O'Shea is obviously the lightning rod for so much criticism around Mayo, though. And the question is, like, is there room in this current GAA setup for an individual thinker? Because you talk about Bernard Brogan there. Like, Bernard Brogan actually became his best when he sort of sacrificed the part of his game, when he started to work a whole lot harder. When you see the view from Aidan O'Shea outside, does it compute at all with what you've seen from him around the Mayo camp?
Obviously, Aidan was the first person ever I've seen to really embrace the kind of social media, the media side of it. And there's learnings in that as well, because that's the future here.
Yeah.
You know? But that's not him. He's the guy that goes to the, you know, he does the charity events. He does all the work kind of around the place. He works hard at training, never misses a game. Like, look at his stats in the history of the game. Yes, there's been games he hasn't played too well in, but without him, Nathan, without him coming on the scene in 2008 and having that day against Kyle Coney up in Croke Park and in Longford, would this journey have ever happened without Aidan O'Shea? And I think you, even as a Mayo fan, you'd absolutely argue would not have. Like, we built the team around him, and everything else kind of flowed around him. His size, his power, his skill, he was the key fella driving it. There's arguments to be made, of course, right now. People are saying, should he be in the team or not? That's not the point we're trying to make. The point we're trying to make is that he was the top 5%er. He was the guy who had the genetics and the strength and the power, and he was the guy that a lot of the supporters and fans got in behind as well. And essentially, he was the fella we built the team around.
Were you a team that managed yourself if an Aidan O'Shea or anybody was, I don't want to say stepping out of line, but doing things, even on social media, that you were going, don't really want that they'd be hauled back into line?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that if you see it throughout the course, I think there was a few mishaps maybe after All-Ireland Finals when the team had split up. But during the time, there was no kind of, like it was, and with all teams, it's like you do not post on social media during our time in playing, you know. So I don't think there was, and maybe I could be, when people are listening to this, they might drag up something, but from my regard, while we were playing in season, I don't think there was anything throughout the course of that 2011-2019.
Most players during their career, they go through it with a very singular focus, you know, on themselves, on the team, on winning, and maybe don't fully appreciate everything that's happening around them. Throughout this book, you seem to, like, you have such a good understanding, I know it's your view, but understanding of what makes certain players tick. Were you always like that? Were you always soaking up information?
Oh, no, and I've got it wrong so many times, Nathan, in terms of maybe going to someone and giving them something and just messing it up. Just messing up. Now, sometimes you get it right, but like, I've dipped my toe into the coaching, and I player managed Balladreen last year, and I got so much wrong. Like, it was actually quite scary. If you asked me in 2015, could an inter-county player go straight into a senior inter-county squad and start coaching? I'd have, to my ignorance, I'd have said yes. And then I coached Balladreen last year and we did a lot right. But the amount of stuff we did wrong was just
what
insane.
Sort of things?
Just dealing with players, talking, maybe reading a fella wrong, you know, just little things. Even like the coaching perspective, what was important within the team, what the tactics you were using, did it work within the team setup? We lost a few fellas to injury. Did I keep going in terms of the strategy I had in place? Did I keep going even though I mightn't have the players to do that? Of course, there was hundreds of things, you know, and it was just the learning of that. And it was kind of with that, the sense of relief in me that if I retired in 14 because my body wasn't in great shape, if I went into an intercounty scene at that stage, all of a sudden my coaching career would be over already, I feel. So it was lovely to get that learning, lovely to get the gap between playing, coaching, and now going into where I'm going with Leitrim.
You seem to have a realisation quite early as well, because I think I remember talking to you around 2013, 2014 of, you know, the obvious question, how do you keep coming back? How do you keep coming back? And you looking sort of bewildered and said, like, how could you not keep coming back? Like, this is everything I dream of. I'm here with my mates training 2-3 times a week. Does every player have that realisation, do you think, that actually, regardless of the winning or the failure, that actually you can take so much from that sort of journey?
I think if people are learning and they're being driven, pushed, there's this kind of notion out there, and even with our young kids, that if you shouldn't push kids. I wouldn't kind of concur to that at all. Kids like being pushed, they like learning, they like pushing their abilities to the limit. And to me, that's what was happening with that Mayo team. We were like, Dublin used to set a standard, we had to go and try to chase it down. They used to beat us, we'd go and try to chase it down again. They'd bring in some new brilliant player like a Paul Mannion or someone to that ilk.
Well, they'd be in the gym, as you pointed out, on the All-Star trips. They'd have their gym session done before you lads were even out of bed.
Yeah.
Do you ever think that was just a psychological ploy to ruin your All-Star trip?
No, I don't think so, because
it's a lot of sacrifice from them as well.
There was only a few people, that's a great point, there was only a few people on that trip to Philadelphia at the time, and I was struggling with going back in 19 with Mayo, and I said to Colin Boyle and David Clark, who were also on the trip, I said, lads, I need a bit of help here. I said, I'm not training. I said, I'm struggling here now. I said, I could be done now if I come out of this trip. So we go out the first night anyway with a few pints, and Clark is up early, and my phone is ringing. I have 3 missed calls. I come down to the gym and Clark, he's there, and he goes, you better cop yourself on. Do you know, we had a good few drinks the night before, do you know?
Yeah.
I was like, how is this machine up? Like, do you know, he goes, the Dublin boys have left already. Do you know, McCarthy had them dragged in and he'd gone already, but it showed where they were, and it was a great kind of element for me. I had a similar sort of experience in 2010 with the Cork footballers. I went on, got a soft trip out to Kuala Lumpur, and a great trip. But the training, them boys had hit the pinnacle, they'd won their leagues, they got their championship, but they were the guys that were training. And they were, and yes, it didn't work out well for them there on, but they were the guys that were still willing to push the kind of boundaries. And like, I was always thinking, I'm training hard here. But I came home from that trip and I was thinking, I'm not. And people say, oh, All-Stars and All-Star trips. When you're mingling with the best in the business, you can pick up so many little lessons from them, and to show yourself that you're not really fully doing it, you know.
And now you survived Bernard Brogan saying, what the hell are you doing here, having been beaten by Longford in the championship?
Yeah, I think that's there's a story in the book, and it was done in, I have to say, it was done in such jest. Like, we were having great, like, that night was a brilliant night. We were having great crack, and you know, the slagging was going over him back. So he was just trying to beat me on one. Yeah. He wasn't trying to get any kind of mixed messages up there. We were just having a bit of fun, but it was a message that stuck with me, and a message that was 100% right about.
Yeah. The reason I ask about the perspective that you seem to have and how you can look back so fondly on the journey without the All-Ireland medal at the end, are all your teammates like that? Because obviously we're in that moment of players retiring, Colin Boyle over the last week. So many of that team, particularly the ones who would have played in 12 and 13, are now stepping away. Mm. When you look around at the rest of them, are there players who you feel might struggle with the fact that they dedicated so much and didn't end it with the medal?
Yeah, and like I'm not a machine here now. There's no question about it. Does it slip into my mind every now and then? Of course it does. I'm not one of these guys that have sleepless nights about it. But you'd be driving by Croke Park maybe today, or you'd be going by McHale Park someday, and you'd get lost in your own head for a second, you know. And it does.
What are you thinking? Something you could have done differently, or what, like, might have happened?
I mentioned All-Irelands. What you do for one. What the town would be like coming back in. They're the little things that would get you. But like, in terms of looking back fondly and getting it, I had a really good time, Nathan, in terms of came straight out of Mayo in 19, went straight into Mayo under 20s, did a bit of media work for yourselves and a couple of others throughout the 20, and then all of a sudden, March 13th, everything was shut down. And then all of a sudden you had time. So for the first time since retiring the previous August, I had to think about stuff. So all of a sudden I started thinking about football, how I miss it, how I miss the group, all this sort of stuff. And that's kind of was really the... I had to start doing something for the book. So yes, do I have fond memories? Yes, of course I do. But was there a time there where, okay, I'm struggling here a tiny bit? And the book and just writing stuff down kind of just helped me through that process.
How much do you miss the group? Because that connection that you had isn't one you can probably replicate out of in everyday life. I know you've got your friends away from football as well, but like, you know, you give the example of Donny Vaughan on the night of your wedding and the first dance, and Donny Vaughan spotting that your mother is sitting on the side and bringing her out for the dance as well. Like, having that sort of emotional intelligence at a pretty young age is quite a rare thing. Like, that sort of knowing that you're probably going to go through the rest of your life without having that sort of connection, or does actually what you've been through mean that that connection is just going to last forever?
Yeah, it's funny. I met Keith Higgins after this year's All-Ireland. You know, we'd meet very irregularly now. So he came down to Ballardreen and we went out together. And the connection just stays.
Mm.
It's like when you meet your old college mates, you nearly can fit back into 2003, 4, 5.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can nearly fit back in there again. They're special connections. Do I miss the group? I miss being in a group where everyone wants the same thing and would do anything to do that. And I think that's where my drive to go back into the inter-county scene came from again. It was like, you go, you meet the Leitrim boys and they want to all improve. Do you know what I mean? And that's a really special place to be in. And I did absolutely miss that, where you're going to training and you're kind of half conscious that the boy beside me might have done more and he's after my spot. And there's that bit of competition element to it. Do I miss the training? Do I miss the hard graft? Absolutely not. Like, honestly, would I do it all again? I'd love the memories and the fun and have another chance to learn a final. But I seen Aidan O'Shea running out with the group against Dublin. He blast the ball up in there. And I was thinking, all in my head was, geez, Aidan has waited a long time to do that. It wasn't. Oh, I'd love to be doing that.
Right.
That day is gone. Really enjoyed it. Loved it. Like, really did love it. But I'll tell you, Nathan, it really is hard work. You ask any of them Donegal boys that went through that in 12, the Cork boys before them, the Kerry lads, the Dublin lads, the Mayo lads, the Tyrone lads. When you get to the 30s, it becomes really, really difficult mentally to keep going.
Well, funny, because I wanted to ask you on that, because your daughter Charlotte's on the cover of the book with you here, and you seem to play your best football after the kids were born. You talk about the perspective they give you, and every player who comes in here over the age of 30, we want to retire them straight away. That actually, the way the game has gone, that it's all consuming for players, that actually having a bit of balance brought the very best out of you. And there's a real lesson that can be learned there for players who are in their late 20s, in their early 30s, or maybe putting the rest of their life on hold, or maybe putting children, marriage, all that on hold because they think the two aren't compatible. That actually just being able to step away, get home and not think about football was probably the best thing that ever happened to you.
I was I was quite unlucky at a time when I started playing the football I thought I could play. Bang, I got a heap of multiple injuries then, but then the pressure I put on myself between 12, 13, 14 wasn't healthy, if I'm being honest with you. Like, I'm a happy sort of fella, kind of lighthearted in a way, but I was under so much pressure in terms of, I was driving all over the country trying to get my body right, trying to do everything. And Pat and Noel then met them between 14 and 15. They said, listen, you're not going to be captain. I said, I don't want to be captain. It's time for that to move on. I should have moved it on a year before that. But then in that gap, Charlotte was born in that December, and it was just light bulb moment, life changing. I was rushing, like, instead of staying around Castlebar, trying to do a bit extra, I was getting in, getting my work done, had a real plan, I was really focused to get home to see her before she go to bed. And it was just little bits like that that really kind of changed my perspective on the whole thing. Changed job then shortly afterwards. And it definitely, if you missed a shot at the game and you came home and you have a screaming little one to you, you definitely, your mindset goes to a different place, you know. And it's great, because sometimes, particularly when you have, and I think a lot of people kind of have probably a mentality similar to myself, they're consumed by it. All they think about, Mayo football, all you think about is Mayo football. You think about the misses, the scores, what other fellas are doing, what other people are thinking of you. and then all of a sudden you have a little one, and that's all that matters really around it, you know.
Yeah, there's loads of lovely little insights into your mindset and the mindset of an elite player. One of them is on the individual awards, and a couple of insights in that. One was, say, one of the first times you were nominated for an All-Star and you were talking to James Horne and you were kind of playing it down in your head and does it really matter? And he was making the point, actually, like that for the group, you winning an All-Star, you being nominated for an All-Star is a sense that we belong at the top table. Also, when Conor Callaghan scores the goal and you and him are in the running, was it Conor Jack scored the goal? You're in the running, Conor, and you're in the running for our Footballer of the Year. And on the pitch, even then, you're thinking, God damn it, he's gone and won Footballer of the Year.
Yeah, and it was again, like that was after, what was it, a minute?
Yeah.
It was a minute. It was just like, okay, that's gone. Do you know, it was gone, so it was lovely. I think I kicked the next point.
Were you feeling the pressure going into that final?
No, I don't think I was. Like, I'd be quite good at kind of dismissing it. But you, like, anyone that says, "Oh, you didn't hear the talk," or "You didn't hear anything like that," of course you do. And it was, but like, I at that stage in my life, I was 33, coming 34. I was 34 the night before the All Stars, and you can deal with it a bit better. At 26 now, I think I'd have struggled. But even at that, like, Con goes and gets the goal, and it was just like, right, okay, that's gone. Let's go and win this thing, you know. And it was a weight, like, if there was a weight there, it was definitely gone at that stage, you know. But it was, the James Horne one was key, I think. 2011, I go, you know, everyone kind of says, oh, they don't matter and they don't do this. And I was kind of saying the same thing. Of course, you wanted to win the bloody thing when you were nominated, you know. And Horne rings and he goes, listen, this is important, because we hadn't had an All-Star since Alan in 2006 and Connor. So he was saying, for the group, to show them what's possible here, this is massive. And then the year after, we'd about four. The year after that, we'd about four, you know.
They
started. And when you have, for teams like Kerry and Dublin who are there all the time, they probably don't matter as much. But for a team that's tried to push through, the likes of Donegal and Mayo at the time, they were probably huge, because it shows, right, if he can do it, why can't I do it? And then the runner, Roger Bannister, won the 4 minute mile kind of thing, you know.
If your teammates decided to go down the same tack and same route and write a book like this, and they wrote a chapter on Andy Moran, what would they be saying? What was Andy Moran's influence?
He never stopped whining and giving out. What was my influence around the group? I think it was the senior member of the team when we nearly lost in. I remember getting the phone call from James Horne the winter of 2010 when he took over. And I was delighted that he'd asked me to come back in the squad, because that was, you just have to get met by two good teams. That Sligo team was a very good team. That Longford team had really good forwards as well. People forget that. But I think what happened in 2010 is that we beat Tyrone, Derry, Kerry and Cork in the league. And then we had that championship and people kind of were like, what's happening here kind of thing. So for Horne to ring and to say, listen, are you interested in coming into the squad? I was like, yes. And he kind of put a kind of senior status on us at that stage. And then we nearly lost to London. Coming through that and building through it, James kind of used myself and Alan as much as he could to get to the squad. So I'd like if they thought that, listen, during that period, we helped them to go along. And when the leadership kind of group moved on, that I was always kind of there to help. But after that, I was a footballer. Did I ever think of myself as the best footballer? Absolutely not. I thought of myself as someone that could do something that maybe other people couldn't do. And if they thought of me like that, I'd be happy enough.
I never would have had you as a whiner and a moaner. I would have thought you're the most positive man in the world.
Ah, yeah, but if they don't pass me the ball, Nathan, you know. I'd be positive in a way, but I'd be kind of always kind of be thinking, if things can be done a tiny bit better, why aren't we doing it that way? Do you know what I'm saying? I think that's kind of the element.
Driving standards.
Yeah,
Fergal Boland gets an awful hammering for stealing your moment of glory at the end of the defeat to Dublin in the semi-final, you could have tapped it over the bar, and you said, no, I'll give it to him to go for goal, and he just taps it over the bar.
I'd have definitely done the same myself. There was kind of a laugh and a giggle about it, but I remember in 2004 I come on, we're getting hammered by Kerry, like hammered, and I remember I'm scoring a point here, you know, and I kick one over the bar, and Brady looks over at me and he absolutely eats me. And I was thinking, I just have to score a point in all the final here, Dave. What are you on about, you know? So it was, he was saying go for goal, you know. And in fairness to him, he was trying to battle to the end, and I was probably trying to do the same thing. But I suppose them kind of things just reflect through your head fairly quickly.
And finally, at the end of every chapter, you have the best of. So you obviously have a great memory for matches and moments. So you go through the best of Ger Caffrey or the best of Donny Vaughan or the best of Killian O'Connor, and boil it all down to maybe one moment in one game. The best of Andy Moran, boiling it all down to one moment in one game.
Yeah, I think there was those great days in terms of football, but in terms of a moment being in the zone and kind of thinking about what you're doing, it was probably the end of that Galway game that I write about, Pather, 2009 up in Salt Hill, and it was just a break in the game. Me and I just scored the goal, equalised, we threw away a 7-point lead, and I was just thinking, okay, and Nicky Joyce ended up marking me, and Nicky was brilliant footballer, he's been with us since Sligo, but he was a corner forward, and I was playing left half back at the time. I was thinking, you surely can win this wing, this break, yeah. And you win it. I set up Pather, so just thinking in the moment and kind of getting going. That was one that kind of always stands out to me. It was a big victory too. It was the kind of final John O won with Mayo at that time in them 4 years as well. So it was a key one for, I suppose, him as well, which made it a bit special.
Thanks a lot for coming into the studio. The book is well worth getting in time for Christmas. It's not your usual GAA autobiography. You're going to learn a huge amount about Mayo and everything that's gone on and the fascinating journey of the last decade. And we look forward to see what happens next with Leitrim. Will there be a Leitrim book next year? Well, managerial insights, is this the start of something?
I've learned never to say never about Anthony, but no, the boys are good boys, and hopefully we get a good response off them.
And a chapter dedicated to Paddy Andrews and Tommy Rooney from the Football Pod as well.
Yeah, Andrews would if Andrews brought out a book and told the stories, that'd be some book.
Did you make sure to go through the entire book without complimenting anything Paddy Andrews had done in a Dublin Mayo game?
I think I mentioned him once, just to get him in.
More than enough. Andy, great stuff as always. Thanks for coming to the studio.